Hey, welcome to Babu's Frickin' Podcast, your non-toxic Star Wars podcast. So great to have you back. As always, I am Mike Chiodi Ruby. With me on the Jedi Council, Grand Moff Mark Valentine. Mark, you have returned from the Galactic Star Cruiser Halcyon. How you feeling?
I miss space, Mike. I don't like Earth anymore, and I want to go back to space. Other than that, I'm great. How are you?
We're all good here. We're fine here. How are you? We will be coming back to Mark's intergalactic adventure later in this episode. I'll cue that up in a minute. But first, Brian, Joe Yowza Lee. Brian, what's good?
I don't like space either, but I've never. Or I've never, I don't like Earth either, but I've never been to space. Am I allowed to think that?
Yeah, I'll allow it.
Kind of trampled my bit there.
It worked. I understood where you were going with that. It's all good.
I'm great, Mike. Thank you.
Yeah.
How are you?
You know, in space they can't hear you scream. So I mean, there's not it's not all sunshine and puppy dogs and rainbows up there.
Question, very real question. Do those aliens exist in the Star Wars universe? I need to know now that Disney owns.
Maybe that's what they evolve into.
Yeah, now doesn't
Just
Disney
blow up everywhere
own?
in a galaxy far, far away. Yeah, Disney.
Yeah, Disney owns 21st Century Fox is an alien property. Disney owns the alien. They own the Predator.
So, I mean, it makes a
Coming
lot of
soon to a Disney theme park near you,
They're also
the
one for one. Well, we need to bring back the extraterrestrial alien encounter, Mark.
Well, and fun fact is Aliens used to be in a Disney park. It was on the Great Movie Ride in Hollywood Studios. So, I feel like this is a very real mashup, Mike. No one can hear you scream
Welcome home.
in Star Wars.
Not that acid trip.
ET also
That's
exists
a
in this.
very different acid trip. That's a very different acid trip when you get on board with the alien.
Mike and I experienced that together. He was like, dude, what?
Welcome
Yeah, what
home.
drugs did we do to get us to this point at ET the ride? This was crazy. And you're like,
It's
wow,
the
that
best.
it was bad. Well, it's a short ride. The first half of the ride is the movie that you know. And then Steven Spielberg's like, yeah, we're going to go to ET's home planet. And that's when it just goes off the rails. And you feel like you just dropped acid. It's crazy. Good times. Good memories.
Good stuff. Good times. Good times. This week on Bobby's Frickin' Podcast, we have not one, not two, but three episodes of The Bad Batch to talk about. And there's some good stuff in these three episodes. You know, we've been a little hit and miss, we've thought, with the first couple, but there's been some stuff in here that I think we're gonna get some good chatter about. And then we are gonna spend a big chunk of this episode talking about Disney's live experiences with Star Wars. Most specifically, as I mentioned, Mark really has been on the Galactic Star Cruiser Halcyon in Orlando, Florida, experiencing the live 2-day immersive extravaganza. You can hear all about it, ask lots of questions, hopefully get some answers, and then chat about the other things that are available to us as I am, I think, finally going to get to go to Galaxy's Edge over spring break. And there's been much told about the Ronto Wrap, and we will talk about the Ronto Wrap today. So, gents, let's get into it. Bad Batch, Clone Force 99. We had three episodes, and we'll kick it off with the episode entitled Faster, the fourth episode of the season. And all I could keep saying for the rest of the day after watching that episode was, now this is pod racing.
Go ahead, Bri.
I mean, Ben Schwartz as the voice of, is it Teo, the droid?
Teo.
Yeah.
Teo.
I love John Ralphio as a droid. I'm glad they were able to throw him in there because he and Bill Hader were modulated voices of BB-8. So now Ben Schwartz is in the Star Wars universe proper. Ben Schwartz can do no wrong for me, so I was fine with it. I think Mike, you called it an interesting choice for the voice actor.
I loved it. That was not sarcastic at all. I was with you. I was like, John Ralphio for the win.
He is the worst. But Ernie Hudson making his appearance in the Star Wars universe. I hope we get a lot more of him. It was a fun episode. Like, it had nothing else to offer other than what it did. I do wish they would go back to the Clone Wars formula of giving us three episode arcs of things rather than these one-offs that we've been getting. All three of these episodes we just got are probably building up into a bigger thing. We don't trust Sid because of what happened in the pod racing one. I think Ernie Hudson would come back at some point. So it's probably building to something, but I missed the three episode arcs.
I agree.
So let's dig into this, because let's establish for our listeners what exactly has happened, because we've kind of hinted at it. So Sid asks Wrecker and Omega and Echo to, Tech to come with her off Ord Mantell to accompany her as she goes to it's like pod racing, but it's like battle pod racing on a planet, and she ends up
it's Mario
in the hole. It's a Mario. Let's go. And she ends up in trouble with one of her former gangster colleagues, Greeny Malegi, voiced, as you said, by Ghostbusters Ernie Hudson. And so they need to basically win Sid's freedom by winning the next race. And the racer that she's been betting on is a hyper-reflexive droid named Teo. As we said, he's been voiced by Ben Schwartz. He gets blowed up in his first race. And so in order to be able to continue, they have to rebuild their battle pod, and Tech jumps in there and ends up piloting. And of course they rescue Sid. The race scenes are really, really well done. Like, the action is great. The animation is great. It's got some good tension. It's the first time I think we've gotten like good, solid, legit, interesting pod racing since Phantom Menace. Like, we've seen it here and there, and there've been some hints about it, but like this was real pod racing. And it was fun. And like you guys said, it calls into question Sid's ethics and her loyalty, and you know, how much is she really using the Bad Batch versus how much is she going to stand by them, even though they really seem to take care of her. I thought it was a fun episode, you know, low stakes, but high adventure. Two thumbs up. Good family fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was also nice to see Tech have something to do finally. I mean, I've been saying now for a while that I just want to get some other storylines out of some of these other characters. It seems like Hunter got a lot of work. Crosshair's got a lot of work in last season, but it felt like even Wrecker fell off after a while. We had this great stuff and this character development for Wrecker, and then that kind of got tossed by the wayside once his chip malfunctioned. This is the kind of stuff I don't mind if it's a one-off. If we get some contributions from the other crew members, this is the kind of stuff that makes you say, hey, that actually worked. It was a fun episode. Mike, I agree with you. Low stakes. But Brian brings up a really good point. What we wound up liking about the Clone Wars was for three or four episodes, you got really into whatever that story arc was.
It wasn't fun when you watched it live, though. I'm going to be honest. Like, the binge model is where that is.
I binged. Yeah, and I binged it. But I think, again, we've talked about this now several times. Clone Wars is another type of show. They should batch release these. They should batch the Bad Batch and release these three or four in a row to give people an opportunity to dive in to multiple episodes. But Mike, you nailed it on the head. I can't say much more than you've already said. It was really fun. The animation was great. The action was great. The choices for the voice actors was really fun and surprising. John Ralphio, you can stay in the Star Wars universe any day. A little suspicious. So what I would say to him is, don't be suspicious. Don't be suspicious in future episodes. But yeah, this was fun. Like, this was just, of the three episodes, I probably enjoyed this one the most, that more so than the Indiana Jones thing that we got in the next episode. But I was in the minority. Everyone really loved the episode with the Wookiee with the lightsaber. To me, this pod racing was probably my favorite of the three.
This week, we're getting a double drop. Episodes 7 and 8 are dropping this week.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which means Crosshair's coming back, and we're going to make some money moves, hopefully.
Yeah, I don't know what they're building towards yet. And that's the other thing that I'm having a really hard time with the one-offs. It's hard to kind of project what we're going to get. And I don't know. I'm still really uncertain with where this show goes. And I kind of said this, and I'm going to stand by this statement. I would be really disappointed if we had three total seasons of The Bad Batch for just five great, outstanding episodes. I would feel really brokenhearted that we kind of got strung along for that long to only have five really seminal episodes of storyline. It's like, well, then was it worth it? I don't know. Like, I feel like The Clone Wars was worth it, given the way that that wrapped up. Like, I feel emotional on the wrap of that show. And The Clone Wars is continuing to pay off, let's face it. Like, we see the clones and other stories popping up in The Bad Batch, and let's be honest, is that not the most gratifying parts of this show, is to see these faces pop up again?
Are you saying we're going to see Teo in a seminal episode of Ahsoka?
One can only hope.
Just wait. We'll just wait until the day that we come back in here and I have to say, Mark, The Bad Batch has paid off. How great was Teo in the season finale of Ahsoka season 2?
Listen, I will eat crow on that day. But until then, I don't look, I've said this. I am sorry. I am the wet blanket. I'm not toxic, but I am the wet blanket when it comes to what Bad Batch is. Do I watch it? Yes. Do I get invested? No. And I'm horrible I'm watching with my phone. I'm scrolling through Instagram and Facebook.
Oh my God. It's really like,
I'm sorry. That's
me. You have truly disconnected from the Force.
I really have, man. And I'm sorry. Like, I apologize. I'm a horrible person, but that's how I'm watching The Bad Batch. I'm not really focused and like dialed in on it. I'm just not. Sorry, gents. Go ahead. I'm going to slink back into the bushes. Have fun talking. Hold on. I'll be right back.
How about you, Mike? What did you think? I know you said you enjoyed this one.
I did. I legit enjoyed this one. I thought it was super fun. I believe it's contributing to the overall story for this season again, making us question what Sid is going to do or not do. I hope she actually turns on them. It'd be actually really nice to see that, you know, maybe something unexpected would happen. I feel like we haven't gotten, certainly this season, we haven't gotten a lot of twists. We had a couple last season that were good.
She has to turn on them to make it interesting, or else that throwaway line would be completely pointless. Or she at least has to give the impression she is turning on them for one reason or another. Maybe she'll double cross the double cross or whatever, but she has to turn on them at some point.
I would love for her to just like non-redemptive throw them under the space bus.
Right.
I would be totally fine with that. Her friend Fee Genoa as well. How are you guys digging Wanda Sykes' Fee Genoa? Are you digging Fee Genoa? Do we dig Fee?
No, I thought that episode was the weakest the show has ever had.
Not a fan of that episode. Da, da, da. It was weird and not in a wonderful way.
Episode 5, moving on, is entitled Entombed, and it was essentially the Indiana Jones Bad Batch adventure where the pirate Fee has the Bad Batch accompany her to go and retrieve some treasure, and they ultimately end up in this strange tomb that it's like hard to describe, like looking for relic MacGuffin. And as always, Omega gets into trouble and they have to go save her. And in the process, we find that the relic is inside of a gigantic robot, like dragon thing,
Brontosaurus. Yeah, it's crazy. It took a turn.
That one, it's like E.T.'s Voyage Home. It took a turn, and I don't know, guys. Like, to be totally honest, like, I thought I heard a line somewhere where they mentioned something about Crystal, And I for a millisecond, I got excited thinking that maybe they were going to find the crystal skull. Because the crystal, you know, the crystal skull is in Solo. It's sitting, you know, among the relics on the barge, and we know there's crossover between the Lucasfilm universes, and so to have that pop up here, that would have been the ultimate egg.
Not a lot of stuff.
That would have been the greatest Matron egg.
Nothing made sense to me in this episode, though. Like, what was that beast that was chasing them? There was just a lot of crazy stuff that kind of happened. Everything was very disjointed. I feel like the writers were smoking peyote after they just finished watching Indiana Jones. And they're like, oh, I got to write this episode now. Oh, man, I'm so high. All right. Nothing
made sense. It's California, though. It's legal.
Yeah, nothing made sense to me. Nothing made sense. And then we get the giant mech. And I was like, are we going to get Godzilla? Like, what's going to happen? Like, how do you stop a giant Abraham Lincoln? Build a giant John Wilkes Booth? Like, what's going to go on? Sorry for the South Park reference, but...
Oh, I haven't thought of that in so long.
Yeah.
That's a galaxy long ago, far, far away.
It just, none of this made sense. And then they trash the robot, and they're just like, all right, let's go. And then, you know, she's like, hey, I know of another relic. All right, this was such a success. Let's do that.
It's just... Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
I think my issue with Feed Genoa specifically is it does feel like somebody sat down and said, okay, what are the worst parts of Hondo Onaka? Let's remove them from Hondo and give them all to one person.
I think she's
going to serve the purpose of introducing Hondo to this universe. I think Hondo's going to pop up at some point this season.
Yeah.
When you're talking space pirates.
Wait.
It's going to happen eventually.
Wait, hasn't Hondo popped up in this? Oh, no, Clone Wars. He popped up in Clone Wars.
He hasn't popped up in Bad Batch yet, but he's coming. Hondo is absolutely coming.
Maybe because I treat this as sort of a continued arc of Clone Wars, and we burnt off the insignia of Clone Wars to reveal Bad Batch. Maybe that my bad, my mistake. But I was like, yeah, Hondo's been on Clone Wars.
I get the... You are without a doubt the worst pirate I have ever heard of.
But you have heard of me.
Just responding, just you have heard of me.
Yeah. It's fair. This episode was just really weird. This is the very definition of a one-off, and let's leave it off for the sake of... I mean, I will never watch this. If I ever revisit this season, I will skip that episode. It was cringy. Very cringy. The next one was good, though.
A solid return to form in episode 6, Tribe, where the Bad Batch is sent by Sid to help put together a deal where Tech is going to counterfeit some chain codes for these mechanized pirates. I didn't quite understand who those droids were, but good on them for taking on the Empire. And in the process, they find, Omega discovers that they are smuggling do we think he's probably a teenager, like a teenage Wookiee?
He's a Padawan. Yeah. So can we sit on this for a minute? Because I said something that I thought was extremely obvious, and I had other people that I was discussing this with completely disagree with me. So I want to get your guys' opinions. So we have the Bad Batch. We have four members, if you don't count Echo, that are part of the Bad Batch. Hunter has extreme senses, and he's a good hunter, for lack of a better term. Wrecker is massive. Tech is super smart and technologically advanced. And Crosshair, we know what Crosshair can do. Omega is a member of the Bad Batch. But what is her gift? Because I think she's force sensitive, and I don't think there's any way around it. I think she's the product of messing with midichlorians and cloning, which is where Grogu and everything that comes into play. I think her gift is she is force sensitive, because she happens upon things. She happens upon Gunji because she has this feeling. I think without a doubt, Omega's force sensitive. And I got pushback on that. I would love to hear what you
guys said. Not at all. We talked about this last season when she was playing when she was playing against Hunter and then playing against all of the people in Sid's bar. I'm sorry, I'm a bad Star Wars fan. I can't remember the name of the game. It's on the Millennium Falcon.
Djarik?
The same game.
Djarik, yeah.
Djarik. And she's whooping everybody's butt, and they identify, like, she has a sixth sense about what to do, and she ultimately has this ability to see ahead and strategize. But yeah, I think it's pretty obvious. You know, if it doesn't end up being that, I don't think it'd be the end of the world, but I firmly believe that she's likely the first and maybe the only Force-sensitive clone.
Okay. Thank you. Mark, do you agree?
I do agree, but it looks like the narrative has veered from that, so Omega doesn't play as prominent as she once did. And that's where, you know, if they veer back into that and they develop that part of her story, I think it makes this show again that much more interesting.
You have to do something with her to make her interesting.
They have to do something with her to make her interesting. I mean, and let's face it, because she is unaltered, because she ages at a normal rate, she is probably the best character, the best crossover character that we can hope to see in another live action project. So their development of Omega into something very interesting and a character that we will get really excited to see jump off of the, you know, the pages and jump into another project, they would be better served to develop that story. And if they don't, and she just shows up in another place, you just go, she's that really annoying character in the Bad Batch. She has a lot of potential. It makes her really interesting if she's Force sensitive. And I think you're right. I think she is. I don't know why they haven't made that the focus of the Bad Batch so far.
And I feel like she should get a broom boy moment. Like, I feel like there should be something where she is being somehow pushed to the limit, or she's trying to do something, and it's almost like she starts discovering her Force abilities by chance.
Yeah.
Like what if she was like, I could see something. She's on the spaceship and she's got, you know, her doll is like just out of, like, just beyond fingertip reach, and she reaches out and she ends up pulling it to her with the Force, but it's not so far that it would be obvious to her. Like, she might just think, oh, I got that extra inch to grab it. But we know as an audience that she just used the Force to will that to her, or that she, you know, she's in an emotionally struggling situation and she's trying to, like, stop something from happening, and she's able to Force repel someone, or she's able to somehow stop a laser blast from hitting somebody. Like, that would be a wonderful discovery moment where I don't think we've ever had a true Force ability discovery moment from a character in canon. Because Grogu, we may have been discovering that, oh my gosh, he's Force sensitive, but he clearly knows, Mike, somewhere.
We really have, and you're not going to like this, but when Rey was trying to bring down that transporter, and she kind of shocked the shit out of it. Oh, sorry.
No, she already knew she had the Force at that point.
Had Force lightning. And sorry for the expletive, gentlemen. She didn't know that she had that in there.
No, that's true. Okay, so qualifier. We've had a dark side discovery moment, I guess. But
yeah. So I think, again, I think she is Force sensitive. Okay. Some of the acrobatics that she's been performing seem to be very in line with what the Jedi are doing in terms of, like, the tumbling, and she's got hops, man. She's got hops for a little kid.
And I return to what we talked about last season. Like, only someone who's so confident in their ability would choose a weak-ass weapon like a laser bow.
I don't care. I think the laser bow's awesome. I know you guys hate it, and I love it.
I'm sorry. If you laid out a table full of weapons, that is probably the last one I'd pick up.
You have chosen poorly.
Mike's like, I'll take this spoon. Don't you want the laser bow? No, I'll take this spoon. I'm good.
Because it hurts more, you idiot.
All right, let's get back to Wookiees with lightsabers, guys.
I love Gungi. I was excited to see him coming. He was in the trailer, so we knew he was coming at some point. I thought he was fun. I took that opportunity to go back to season 5 of Clone Wars and rewatch his 4-episode arc, specifically the one where they're in the temple looking for their kyber crystals. Mm-hmm. I don't find many of the younglings really that interesting. However, a couple of them I do, especially him. Him learning patience, and that lightsaber hilt he's got made out of wood is, I mean, let's face it, the Wookiees live in Portland. They're the most liberal and driving their Subaru Outbacks everywhere, and so making a lightsaber hilt out of wood makes a ton of sense for him. I thought it was cool. It was nice to see him progress. I love his one little snaggle tooth. He's my buddy. I love Gungi.
They take full advantage of the moonroof feature in the Subaru Outback. So how do we think Gungi survived? So, you know, just to rewind it, you know, these robot pirates are collecting a bounty on Gungi. We don't know who for. It doesn't sound like the Empire, because again, these guys are grabbing chain codes, but maybe it is the Empire. How did Gungi survive Order 66? Do we have any guesses aside from just being a badass Wookiee?
I think there were probably a lot of people that helped others escape the temple that day. There's been some discussion on, and we're going to see another flashback of how Grogu gets out. But I think that's what's fun. You know, do I think that a singular Sith Lord and then Anakin and, you know, a platoon of troopers could have kind of bottled up everybody and kept everyone from escaping? No, I mean, even Obi-Wan and Yoda have enough intuitiveness to realize that, like, people got out. That's why there's the beacon. It's kind of fun. Like, this is a fun aspect of this time period, is that there can be a lot of Jedi who survived. And then the whole hunt down, we always thought, right, hunt down and destroy was like one singular action. But now we get to see via Obi-Wan and the Inquisitors that they quite literally were on cleanup duty, going around the universe, finding, seeking out, and systematically killing everyone that was force sensitive or
brave. For over a decade.
Yeah. So,
just curious, like, if there was any. Well, and I apologize, I'm not as familiar with that Clone Wars arc. Who is Gungi's? Do we know who Gungi's master is? I was wondering, like, was he off world with his master? And it's kind of a Caleb Dune situation where maybe his master was killed and he was able to get away. So it was more of a general conjecture from you guys about maybe where he was and what he was doing. And I don't know enough about this character other than I've seen a little bit of that arc, but not the full arc.
So, I mean, we don't know who his master is. The arc is Ahsoka takes these 5 younglings to get their kyber crystal and they meet Yoda there. And then there's this big thing. And then there's another 3-episode arc where Hondo basically takes over their ship and they have to like fight back and whatever. The most interesting part of the 4-episode arc is them getting their kyber crystals. But Mark will understand this for sure. Until I'm proven wrong, I'm just assuming Jocasta knew, saved Gungi as she did everybody else. Mm-hmm. Until I'm proven wrong.
Well, there's a lot of story in this time period. And I would like to see them continue to visit this time period. Surprisingly, Ewan McGregor's been talking about this, and they're kicking the tires on an Obi-Wan season 2.
Please no. Please no.
There's heavy speculation that you're going to get it. There's some speculation that we're going to see Hayden Christensen in the 3rd season of The Mandalorian in a flashback, and we might see him in the Jedi Temple. There's heavy speculation that he is the one that took pity on Grogu and actually spirited Grogu away. So, look, there's a lot of story.
And we know for certain that he's going to be in Ahsoka.
Correct. Oh, yeah. We know that for sure.
Yeah.
I liked Gungi's characterization in that he is the chillest Wookiee I've ever seen.
Super chill.
Like, super chill, super in tune. He doesn't go Wookiee crazy the way that you see some of the other Wookiee warriors. Like, he is just very, very calm and in tune with the Force. And I thought it was really interesting to see that. He's kind of like I haven't read any of the High Republic stuff, but there's a There's a Wookiee Jedi in the High Republic who just looks like the noblest of Wookiees.
So here's the interesting thing, and here's what here are my hopes for what happens. Up until now, the Bad Batch has kind of, they've flown largely under the radar. Yeah, they've been on Crosshair's kind of map with all of this, but now with lightsaber markings showing up, does the Bad Batch now get some Imperial attention that they don't want? Because now they're running with, or they have some entanglement with a Force-sensitive person, and now they might actually be getting a lot more notoriety than they want. So I'm hopeful that this run-in with Gunji, this battle, the little skirmish that they get into, is going to explode kind of their encounters with the Imperials, and then obviously Crosshair will come back into this, via that, but... This might be a real pivotal episode for where the season and the show goes. And, I think there's a lot of potential with this last episode. It was great. It was really fun, but I think that this can be something that they can turn into a real, real story.
Well, I worry a little bit as well about, so the next part of the episode is after they discover Gunji, they rescue him and they agree to take him back to Kashyyyk. To try and reunite him with his tribe on the Wookiee homeworld. And they get there, and the planet has been partially decimated. They find a number of Trandoshans who are out hunting Wookiees, destroying the forest, pushing the tribes deeper and deeper into the woods. And ultimately, they end up finding his tribe, and they get him settled back in, and they help repel the Trandoshans and repel
the
Imperial forces that are there.
Find his tribe.
Okay, they found a tribe.
And Parfum, which is important.
The battle scenes were super cool. I don't know if we've ever seen these on Kashyyyk before, but I enjoyed the He-Man style battle cats that the Wookiees were riding on. I thought those battle cats were pretty fantastic. But to your point, Mark, the thing that I was left afterwards nerdily wondering was, oh my gosh, how much attention has this now brought to Kashyyyk for the Empire, where we know that the Empire is going to enslave so many of these Wookiees? The Inquisitors are coming to Kashyyyk. Like, once they realize there's now a Force-sensitive, Padawan or Jedi on Kashyyyk, like, call the brothers and sisters, here come the Inquisitors, like, they've kind of brought hellfire down on Kashyyyk by bringing this guy home.
I agree. And I think eventually there's got to be something that pushes the Bad Batch into a greater narrative than just running odd jobs for Sid. Has to be. Like, I'm holding out hope that we're going to get more and something that is going to be connected to the larger struggle. I mean, these guys they're too interesting and they're too good to just continue to run A-team style jobs week to week. And that's just the extent of this show. I would love to see Inquisitors. I would love to see these next two. And again, we're getting two episodes. These next two episodes address the fact that they're running with a Jedi. I wouldn't be heartbroken if we get Ahsoka in some form or fashion kind of running in. It doesn't need to be a long arc, but having Ahsoka and Rex come back into this, these guys getting recruited in. We've already seen the twins come in, and they're now kind of dabbling with the rebellion. There's a lot of great characters that are out there that can pull these guys in to the greater narrative, and it would give them a form and a function and a purpose. And it would also give Omega something really great to do. If Omega becomes a part of the rebellion and she serves, in the early stages of the rebels, like, that would be very satisfying, and that would be something that I think would really redeem the show for me.
It also needs to have some sort of interconnected story that keeps me interested when the Mandalorian drops, because if we're really going to do 6 weeks of overlap here,
right,
I'm going to have to watch the Mandalorian 4 or 5 times before I even consider watching the Bad Batch anyway. So you've got to get me interested again, somehow, some way. There's a reason they're overlapping, unless it was maybe the Mandalorian won't be ready in time, so therefore we're going to have a built-in fallback. But it seems like Mando's coming out on time, so you need to do something if we're going to really have this overlap. So I don't know. I like this one. I thought Tarful coming back was actually really fun. Callback to...
Was that Tarful?
Yeah. It was.
Oh, cool. I did not recognize. I did not. Well, yeah, I didn't recognize him. I didn't realize.
Yep. So it was Tarful, and we saw Tarful in Fallen Order. So we've seen him a couple of different times now. So it's interesting, but yes, I think enslaving the planet of Kashyyyk. If Crosshair gets sent to Kashyyyk next week, then I'm in. Like, then we know kind of what's going on here.
Yeah.
But we're getting two episodes this week. We've got half the season, a little more than half the season to go, and we need to speed it up.
Yeah. Agreed.
I also enjoyed the female Wookiee chief, Yana. I
Yeah.
thought she was a cool I thought she was very cool. We've never seen a grandmotherly figure among the Wookiees. We haven't had a whole lot of interaction with female Wookiees, period. You know, I don't think that, you know, Chewie's wife was not a strong representative of female Wookiee power. She
Yeah. Had a good Life Day dinner. Yeah.
did make a good Life Day dinner, but like she was not going and rocking like a Wookiee pantsuit and like running the government.
No. But listen, let's not belittle what she was tasked with. She had to clean up all those stormtrooper bodies off of the front lawn because immediately after Life Day, like Chewbacca went off to fly away with Han Solo and leave his wife and child behind because he was
Well,
an absentee parent.
I also have to say, like, I had a moment where I was actually hoping maybe Gungi was going to get to hang out with Lumpy. I'm not even lying. I'm
Fingers
not even
crossed.
lying. They roll in on the village. We don't know which tribe it's going to be. And I was like, oh my gosh, is this going to be the ultimate crossover? Are we truly like, is he going to get to see Chewbacca's family? Like, no, Chewie, I don't want Chewbacca in
Bring
this.
Lumpy
But
into
oh my goodness, what if he went and he got to like go hang out with Lumpy? Like, that would have been.
only if the animated version of Lumpy also has creepy human teeth. That's the only way I want
There's got to be an explanation for somewhere. Like, Lumpy is the only Wookiee who looks like that.
I feel like it always comes back to, for the three of us here, it always comes back to the holiday special. Like that was our seminal episode of this podcast. That I think that was our genesis, man. That's when we really found gold, solid gold. But listen, I'm excited to see where the show still goes. It's Star Wars. I'm gonna watch it. As long as it's Star Wars, I will consume it. But there's varying degrees of great in the Star Wars universe. This is not quite great yet. It's good. It's good. It's okay. But I want to cry on my couch when Luke Skywalker shows up. That's what I have come to expect and love about Star Wars. And I haven't had a moment where I've teared up or got emotional. Ahsoka Tano taking the helmets of the clones and, you know, kind of arranging them to that score at the end of that. Like, yeah. Like that's what I want from my Star Wars animated anymore. I've raised the bar.
Yeah, you're not ever gonna get that from this show, I don't think. To close the loop, Buriaga Agaburi. That is the Wookiee Jedi from the High Republic.
Okay. All right, gents.
Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga.
Baba Yaga.
I'm excited for the two episode drop next week. I hope you guys are right that it means that it's something important. Speaking of hit or miss Star Wars Visions has announced their second batch of episodes coming out this spring. I'm excited for it.
I loved
I think we need
Visions.
it. We need a return to Bunta Eve, an encore performance of the Star Wars emo band.
But all eight of the animation studios this time are outside of Japan. None of them are Japanese this time. So they went worldwide on these animation studios. So it's going to be very different than the first season was.
Cool. I'm stoked. Give it to me. Like I don't mind that they're hit or miss. I think we talked about this, and you know, listeners, go back and check out our Star Wars Visions episode. I enjoyed that there was something for everybody. Like it was kind of like you went into it knowing like maybe not everything is going to be my jam, but I'm going to give it all a taste. It was the smorgasbord, the charcuterie board, if you will, of Star Wars animations, and I'm excited for another round of it this spring. Get something a little bit different.
I hope they hit
Visions
their
season two
all-star. I
coming
hope
to a
they hit
screening
their
room.
all-star voice cast.
Yeah,
I just
if nothing else, Visions gave me Alison Brie in the Star Wars universe. as a Force user. So I will eternally be grateful to Visions for that. And David Harbour.
Yeah, and David Harbour in an ultimate role. And now, and this is your callback, guys. Star Wars Visions Season 2, The Return of Teo John Ralphio.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm in.
It's going to be sooner rather than later. All right, let's get to Mark's adventure in the stars. So, kick it off, Mark. So, tell us a bit about what the Galactic Star Cruiser experience is at Disney World, and then let your nerd boy friends Brian and Mike just pepper you with questions about what it is like to spend 2 days, for all intents and purposes, living inside the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, so let me tell you really quick what it is and what it is not. It is an immersive, live-action role-play experience. From the moment that you board and you get out of your car and you board the Halcyon, which is the Galactic, it's the Chandrillon luxury cruiser line, to the minute that you land back on Earth, you are immersed in a story that is open-ended. I said it's so cool looking too. So, I mean, every facet of it is movie quality, from the acting and the costuming, that you have, you know, these characters and these droids that are rolling around, to the location and the bridge of the ship. You feel like you are floating in orbit and traveling through hyperspeed. But there were some moments where I kind of laughed and I was like, you know that we're in Role Models right now, and we are straight up the guys from Role Models, just basically like live action role playing. And we all nodded and we're like, yes. To do it, you kind of have to acknowledge your fandom and like your comfort level with being a straight up nerd. If you have any kind of apprehension about being a flat out nerd, it's not the thing for you. It's not a hotel. It's not a resort. It's not rooms. It's not, hey, I want to go and stay in a Star Wars hotel. It's not a Star Wars hotel. I have come to hate that term now. I hate the term Star Wars hotel because it's not a hotel. And people online are like coming at me and they're like, you sleep in it, don't you? Yeah, it is. So for that sake, yes, like the definition of hotel would qualify. But you barely are in the room because the characters and the narratives go up until about 11 p.m. every single night that you're on it. So they are keeping you really just engrossed in the story. You get on the ship. They give you about an hour to take you around, show you where everything is. But even in that time period, some of the things that you do, like you could be doing things during your tour that will actually like jumpstart or kickstart your story. Like for instance, I went with four guys. I was so lucky to be gifted this opportunity. So Michael, who books Disney trips, he books Star Cruiser trips. Disney wanted Michael to understand exactly what he was booking. So Michael was allowed to, as a cast member, take three other people with him for this experience. He took his brother-in-law, Greg. Greg took his son and knew that I was like the ultimate Star Wars geek and was like, Mark will be fun on this. Like, Mark will get into character. He's an actor. Like, this is the guy that he's not going to be the wallflower. Let's take this dude because he's going to push. If anyone's going to push the envelope, it'll be him. So they offered me a once in a lifetime opportunity to do this. And I didn't say no, but like from the minute you get on the ship. So Greg is, he's the dude on the limo that plays with the buttons, right? We all have that one friend that like you get into a limousine and he's the guy that's like Tom Hanks and Big, rolling the windows up and down, taking the divider up. Hey, what's this button do? Oh, it turns on the radio. Like that's Greg. So there are like, there's interactive stations throughout the ship and you can log into them and they give you access to different features of the ship. And like you have to hit passcodes for stuff. And he just starts straight up pressing buttons, has no clue what he's doing. And then we get a message on our data pad from somebody aboard the Chandrillon line. It's like, hey man, why are you guys trying to breach the security systems of the ship during your tour? And we got a message from the smuggler, the resident smuggler, that then scheduled a meeting with us later on. That's like, I got to meet you guys. Like, I like your chutzpah. I like the fact that you guys are screwing around right now. Let's connect. And we started, while doing our tour, we started on the smuggler story arc, without really knowing it, and we fumbled into it. But it's there are set scripted moments, so they're going to tell their story, but there is a lot of improvisational acting. The cast members that are there and the characters are interacting with you and pulling you into a very open-ended narrative. They'll have you running different jobs. They'll have you splicing into different systems. They'll have you smuggling artifacts and items from one end of the ship while the First Order are kind of like on your tail.
So the thing is like under the control of the First Order, basically.
Yeah, so this story, and that's the other thing, you guys would dig it the most because it's set in between The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker.
Can I change how The Rise of Skywalker plays out?
Very possibly, Brian. All right. Very possibly. For people who want a Star Wars adventure set in the original trilogy, you will inherently be disappointed. While the Halcyon is old, and it's older than even that era, you really do not see much mention of the Holy Trinity of Han, Leia, and Luke. There is an Easter egg, and I don't want to spoil it, in the engine room for Han Solo and Leia Organa. Their honeymoon was spent aboard the Halcyon. And so there's a little Han Solo and Leia Organa Easter egg somewhere hidden on the ship.
Well, that was a big thing when this opened up, was that you could stay in the room where Ben Solo was conceived.
Correct. So this is, it is a 24-hour, and it's really 48 hours of nonstop Star Wars story. And just imagine that you have placed yourself in an original story, in an original film. When it ends, I'm telling you guys, you think that the damn credits are going to roll. Like, you think that you're going to get the fanfare and you're going to be looking out the ship and there's going to be blue credits rolling for, like, the cast and crew that just put this whole thing together. That's how big of a moment it is. And it's hard to come down off of it. That's the other part. When you return to Earth, it's kind of like removing, like, these goggles and being like, and I'm back. Like, the depression was like, whoa. And it hit immediately. You're like, I want to go back to space.
It's like how you feel when you leave Disney World, except it hits you while you're still at Disney World.
While you're still at Disney. We walked around Epcot, and everyone's like, Mark, why do you look so sad? I'm like, it's Spaceship Earth, but it's not in space. And I mean, like, I'm a diehard Disney fan, and I was, like, Disney depressed being in Disney. But they do, like, and shout out to the cast of the adventure. I mean, the acting skills, Mike, it's something that you would definitely appreciate. You and I have done improv. They are so great at getting everyone engaged in the story. Even people who are wallflowers and might be a little shy and apprehensive about taking a more active role, they will incorporate you. Like, they will find you and they'll get you involved in whether it's the heist or, you know, this mission. I mean, there was one point that we had to break someone out of the brig. They had just gotten thrown into the cell by the stormtroopers. And the guy's like, dude, you got to get him out. Like, you're the only guys that can do this right now. And then we had to hack into one of the computers. We had to hack into the mainframe. And the password resets on the brig every 7 seconds. So in real time, you had to communicate to someone at the panel from the station that was, like, well across the ship. You had to get the code, the 5-digit code, to enter it in, and if you didn't get it in time, it reset and it gave you an error to break this guy out. And we just broke this guy out, and then we turn around and there's Chewbacca, like, telling us, like, come here. And we got to, like, have this very intimate moment with Chewbacca, and I just freaked out.
Nice.
Yeah, I just totally freaked out. If you're not a diehard Star Wars fan, it'll be lost on you. And I'm just gonna come right out and say that, like, all of this stuff, you'd be like, cool. But you wouldn't have the reaction. Like, the three of us, we would have that kind of reaction. Star Cruiser's not for the general public. And that's why it gets a lot of hate. A lot of hate. Because it's also super expensive.
Can you imagine being that poor nerf herder, though? Like, can you imagine, like, that person who gets arrested and, like, somehow accidentally the crew forgets that they're there and they end up spending, like, a massive chunk of their Galactic Star Cruiser vacation in the brig.
Is the guy you broke out an actor?
He was an actor. Like... No. So the guy that we broke out.
Oh, he's an actor. I thought he was I thought he was a guest. I mean, can you imagine, like,
so as like, a guest, you
know, like Grandpa Simpson when they abandon him, being like, knock, knock, knock.
So the the plus side, and I do want to tell you.
You have my pills.
I do want to tell you this. If you did get thrown into the brig as a just a normal person, you can break out. There's actually like you could break out like friggin' Shawshank Redemption style. There's a way to break out that you don't have to be in the brig for more than 30 seconds. Once the stormtroopers, if they walked away, you can get out.
But is there a way
you dig a hole behind your Padme Amidala poster?
There's a panel that actually pushes in and pushes away.
Is there a way I could store a bunch of coins in my belly and then just shoot them like they're bullets at the oncoming prison guard?
You probably could do that as well. But we were in the bar, and there's a musician that's on the ship. He's an actor, came over, and he's
Max
like,
Rebo?
No, it's I can't remember his name. I'm having
I'm sorry, I'm kidding.
No, he's a human, so he's a humanoid. He comes over. His story arc is, I mean, he boarded the ship with hopes of like joining the main acts band. And so he's working on his musical repertoire, and he worked through a song with us, and the song was actually it was belittling to the First Order. And so the First Order obviously walk in mid performance that we've helped him create the song. And they're like, who wrote that? And then it's like, oh crap, record scratch moment. And they grab him, they put him in binders, and they throw him into the jail. And then the person's like, you guys are responsible for this. You got to get him out. Like, you wrote that song, and now he's sitting in jail. You got to get him out. But there's little surprises, and there's just moments like that. And you have to commit to it.
We have talked about this. Speaking of commitment, I don't know if Mark or if Mike knows anything about this. Mark, you practiced your sabacc skills prior to going to this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Stop.
No. Like, that's not even half of it. Mark, please tell your sabacc story when you talk about.
All right. So.
Okay. This is incredible, Mike. I don't believe him still.
Yes.
But I hope it's true.
You don't need an extensive backstory, right, guys? To play, they just ask you what planet you're from. So, but Mike, speaking of which, we talked about my commitment to role. I grew a goatee. I actually grew my hair out super long. Like, I didn't cut my hair for basically 2 months to have a full head of hair instead of my normal, like, scruffy spiked look.
I wish your name was Johnny Utah.
I created, like, derivative of Mark. I dropped the C and I became Mero Vale, shortened Valentine. And I was from Corellia. I was a street urchin. I used to run like low-level jobs, and like a lot of people on Corellia, I couldn't wait for my first opportunity to get off, and I ran into the rest of my crew. We wound up bound in a bar after like a night of debauchery and having fun, but then we became the crew of the Lucky Seven was the name of our ship, and I lost our ship in hand of Sabacc. And the rest of the crew was telling me to push the bet. I pushed it too far, and I lost our ship. So we had to book a berth on this to find our next whatever in life. And so we like kept on coming back to that story. We became the Lucky Seven to everyone on the ship. They're like, oh, the Lucky Sevens, huh? Where's the other three? And we're like, hey, we never said math was
our so lucky.
Yeah, we never said math was our strong suit. And that's also why this guy lost our lost our ship in a hand of Sabacc. But part of my thing was I was like, I am going to enter and I want to get far in the Sabacc tournament. So they play Carillion Shift on there's many forms of Sabacc. So they play Carillion Shift. You can learn how to play. There's a hollow Sabacc deck in the sublight lounge. And so I was committed. I got to the last table. And I was going to be sitting at the last table. There were four players that were going to play for the championship. And I got sidelined by one of the four sensitive crew members who made me choose, are you going to continue to gamble? You've already lost everything. Or I'm giving you an opportunity to connect to something greater than yourself. And I got to do one of the seminal force user events in the experience. But the cast member made me kind of choose, and I didn't even show up to the final game. They made me choose. It's like fortune or glory, kid. They made me choose what path I was going to go, and I skipped the final table after that was going to be one of my defining things. I was like, I'm going to win Sabacc. I didn't even play. The Jedi guy made me, he made me choose. And I chose the path of the Jedi. And like, I had a lot of one-on-one moments with them that they were like, Mero, like, so tell us, like, how do like four guys just randomly come together? And, you know, maybe there's something greater in this. Maybe you were meant for better things and just being a street urchin and like playing cards. Like maybe your destiny hasn't yet been written. And I was like, I'm not going to be a force user. I am not going that path. I want to be a smuggler. And dude, they did such a great job in trying to change me from what I had predetermined of what my story was going to be. And they pulled me into the force user arc, man. It was cool.
Yeah. So this is when you're saying like, you have to be committed to the bit. If you're going to spend this kind of coin on 48 hours, like you can't just go and just people watch the whole time.
No, you got to be part of it. And you don't, but I cannot tell you how many of the other passengers that like, we became friends with a lot of the other passengers, because if you buy into it, you find friends amongst the other cast and the other crew. But there were so many people that we met that said, you know, I came on thinking I was going to do this, and then I just organically went with whatever was presented, and they totally shift what they thought they were going to do. Some people came on, thought they were going to play a heavy role with smuggling, and they wound up like really latching on to the force users. Some people, you know, did join the First Order. The cool thing about this too is it's not like, Brian, you know, the video games where it's like, you know, oh, I can make a bad decision and then it builds up my bad attributes. You can turn, straight up turn, at any point in the narrative. You are presented with a lot of opportunities to sell out your, you know, your friends and your side.
That would make going to bed that next night kind of awkward.
Correct. So I also don't want to, so there's a heist, and I don't want to give away the story. There's a heist, and at the end, the rendezvous point for said heist is in a room that's restricted. And the cast member asked, and I thought it was more of a rhetorical question, do we have the artifact? And then I realize that there might have been someone who very truly infiltrated the heist, got their hands on the artifact, and smuggled it away. And there is a very real possibility that we would not have been successful, because there were a lot of people who were playing both sides and were double agents. And it's fun. Like, it's really fun. Like, it's the best elements of, like, a murder mystery. It's, you know, a Star Wars story. There are very real variables. I mean, this was exciting, and it was exhausting. By the time we got off this thing, we were tired. We were beat up, because you run around the entire time. You are actively living in the Star Wars universe, and it's so fun.
Mike, what questions do you have?
I there was so much covered there. I don't want to, at this point, the way it's been described, I don't want to ruin much more. I mean, that sounds pretty fantastic. I mean, I think my big question is, so when are we going?
That was my question. When are we going, gentlemen?
So
yeah, like in the words of Jerry Maguire, who's coming with
me? Who's coming with me? So I who's do want to,
besides,
I'll be Renee Zellweger.
Yeah. So the cost of a room, let's call it for simplicity's sake, is like $6,000. I would gladly do this again. Was it worth, or in my opinion, would it be worth that amount? If you had a crew, four guys or four people that loved Star Wars, breathe Star Wars, it is just such a part of who you are. It's worth every penny. Would I pay $1,500 to go and do that again? Absolutely. Because I think I only unlocked about 65% of the story. There were some things that I didn't unlock, and there were some routes that I didn't take. And
there's kind of three, like you could go smuggler, Force Sensitive, or First Order. Like those are the three branches of the story.
of the
main.
Or did
they have to interact at some point?
Okay, of the main story, yes, but there's a lot of other side characters that you can invest in and get involved in. Like, you know, there's an engineer, there's the musician storyline. It's not as it can be as simple as you can follow the path of the light, or you can, you know, join the First Order, or you can fall somewhere in the middle in that gray area in between. But then there's character-based storylines that you can invest a lot of your time and energy in, building familiarity with a specific cast member or a specific crew mate. And that's where that's cool. That's where I say I didn't unlock a lot of the story, because there were just some interactions that I didn't have. Like Lieutenant Croy, who is the general, we'll call him the General Hux for sake of the ship. I had maybe two interactions with him the entire time. One of which was to run a distraction, and I kind of like ran out and I was like, General Hux, we haven't had a chance to talk. You know, I am quite offended that you haven't come to me. Like, I can sell you some pretty valuable information. And then as I'm doing this, like, Ray gets spirited away. And, like, he's engaged with me. And Ray, who is now boarded the ship, has, like, kind of, like, gone, you know, behind us. But there's a lot of cast members that I didn't have a chance to interact with, just because I knew the best tip I got from a friend was talk to the people that you have fun talking to. Because you can't do everybody. So don't waste time with storylines or individuals that you're just not interested in. So I gravitated towards the smuggler. I gravitated towards the engineer. The captain had us running many missions for her at times, which was cool. She kind of picked us out because we were the lucky sevens. But we, you know, we wound up talking to the people that we wanted to talk to. God forbid I never get to do this again. I didn't want to leave anything on the table. I wanted to make sure that I had the experience that I wanted. I was really selfish with it. But there were some characters that tried to rope me in. I was like, no, 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 no. Go away. Leave me alone. I don't want to get involved in you.
All right. Well, I think among us, there are two or three people we could probably rally to our cause. So
do the Lucky Sevens fly again? Perhaps they do. Perhaps they do.
We'll find our way into this. Well, I mean, it sounds like this is kind of an unparalleled, second to none. Disney does it all to the nines.
It is.
You know what, you know, without getting deep into it, you know what, without getting too deep into it, but, you know, again, if we think about all of the live experiences that they're offering, you know, there's lightsaber training for the kids, and, you know, and then there's obviously the larger Galaxy's Edge experience that's out there now. Like, overall take from you guys on what is Disney doing right with these Star Wars experiences, and what are the must, you know, assuming that not everyone has got the galactic credits to get aboard the Halcyon.
Well, Brian,
that people have to do in order to really maximize their Star Wars experience at live Disney? And would love to hear from you guys who have both been there.
Yeah, Brian, you would be perfect to talk about this because you lived this. Like, you were there. Galaxy's Edge was a big part of, you know, your family and you guys going to the park and doing it regularly. I visit Batuu a lot, but you are perfectly qualified to say how Disney's doing with the Star Wars stuff.
Yeah. So I mean, I had small kids. We were down there a lot, and it would be like, it's Friday, I really need to see the Millennium Falcon, let's go. But when it comes to just simply visiting as a day guest, you can spend upwards of 3 to 4 hours without any trouble at all, especially if you do the Savvy's lightsaber, which is, I think, $215. It's a 25-minute experience, and it's really, really cool. I did it once myself, and then I was a patron or like a guest on another one, so I didn't actually get to physically build, but kind of got to take it all in. It's a whole recited story and like the lights and the voices and everything. It's really cool. You can build a droid as well, which you can do an R2 unit or a BB unit. Those are actually pretty cool as well. You can put different personality chips in them, so they act differently, sound different, like all that kind of stuff. The marketplace is really neat. They've themed it really, really well. Now out at Disneyland, they're being a little bit more, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit less restrictive on who can come visit. People like Din Djarin and Grogu and Boba Fett and Fennec Shand and people like that. in Florida, it's very much a part of the Galactic Star Cruiser storyline. Yes. So they are very much tied to a specific storyline. So they're not going to deviate from that. So they're not going to introduce characters like Din or Grogu or people like that. Because correct. One, I think it's a little bit different the way they have actors and unions and all that kind of stuff in Florida versus California. And also just it doesn't fit the storyline. So, but the two attractions, we talked about Hondo already on this episode. Hondo runs Onaka Transport Solutions, which is right in the center of Galaxy's Edge where the Millennium Falcon is. As big as you think the Millennium Falcon in real life can be, it's still, you're not dreaming big enough to see a full-size Millennium Falcon. It's the coolest thing.
Yeah.
It's the coolest thing to get a picture of. I legitimately cry every time I see it. It's incredible. Star Wars Rise of the Resistance is the pinnacle of theme park attractions. The theming and everything. When you board, I'm not going to give too much away. When you board your ship and you leave Batuu and you end up on a Star Destroyer, they thought of everything, man. Like, and if you'd think of everything with something that sees thousands and thousands and thousands of guests every single day, imagine how much attention to detail for somebody that's paying that amount of money for a 48-hour experience on the Galactic Star Cruiser, and there's only 150 of you around. The attention to detail and the hands-on. Again, fellas, when are we going? Mark, I did have a question for you about the Halcyon real quick. I know your wife pretty well. Mike, I don't know your wife at all. None of our wives. Mine is probably the biggest Star Wars fan, at least between your wife, Mark, and mine. Would spouses who just like to see their spouse have fun, is it worth the money for them?
So what I take Linda, knowing Linda and her love of Star Wars, if she said, you know, I'd really like to do this with you, like, I wouldn't hesitate, because you don't need to know any Star Wars to really enjoy. And as a matter of fact, I saw so many spouses that were there for their husbands. I saw a lot of husbands that were there for their wives that were really getting into it. I mean, like, they went full on, you know, they dressed the part, and you could see that they were getting joy from it. Not just that they were getting joy from watching their spouse living their best Star Wars life, but they were enjoying it, because if you even mildly commit to playing a part of it, it's fun. It's just really fun. It's why do people like, you know, the murder mysteries that you can go to a party and, you know, someone sets up a murder mystery. It's just fun to suspend your disbelief and to, like, become a part of this really fun, immersive game. And there's, I feel,
like, murder. Yes. Yeah.
And I feel like calling it a game cheapens it, because the execution of this is done on a level that you are just like, holy crap, I'm in a movie. I am in a movie right now. When you are, like, shooting at TIE fighters on the bridge, you're in it. Like, you're just going, holy crap. Great, kid, don't get cocky. It's just that level of awesome.
Well, what about kids? I mean, that's the other thing too, is there an age limitation? Is there an age that you think is, even if there isn't, an age that's appropriate or inappropriate?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a lot of reading on the data pad. So I would say that sweet spot is probably like fifth grade, sixth grade, right before the kids are too cool for school and they're like, man, this is really, I mean, hey, you might have a kid that's in high school and they're like, dude, well, I am the right level of nerd. I would have been the right level of nerd.
Did you see kids? Were there kids on your journey?
There were. this is going to sound horrible. It was mostly people our age, gents. It was mostly people who grew up in the 70s and 80s, diehard Star Wars fans. There were kids. The kids that were there did really well. Some of them just winged it, and they really got into the action. But the majority of people that were there were adults, and they were adults that fully committed to the parts and to the roles, and it was really fun. Really fun, man. I just...
Well, you talk about the amount of hate that it gets.
And it does.
Each their own, whatever. Do you see anybody, or have you come in contact with anybody who spent that money, went through that experience, and didn't call it worth it?
Very few. I mean, occasionally you will see on the groups. I mean, there's a lot of groups that are dedicated to this. So the first thing that I would say is, if if you're really kicking the tires on it, go and join one of the many Facebook groups out there that are devoted to getting ready for it, cosplay ideas, people who want to give you like the best tips to maximize your time. I mean, we could have did that, but we're more of a generic podcast than we are about talking about like vacations or vacation planning. But there's a lot of groups out there that can help you. There are occasionally, I will see a few people who say it didn't meet their expectations, but I think that they probably set their bar unrealistically high or expecting that they were going to do something and they were just very rigid in whatever their choice was. But there's, so like if you set your heart on saying like, I wanted to be a smuggler and the smuggler doesn't choose you and you try to like shoehorn, you know, like I'm doing this and only this. And if I can't do this, I'm not going to be happy. There's some of that at play that I think the people that didn't enjoy it came on thinking, if I don't do X, Y, and Z, I'm going to be wholly unhappy or dissatisfied with it. And you can't go in with that attitude. It's again, it's a very organic story that, you know, sometimes like there will be characters and arches that will find you naturally. And you have to be kind of open-ended to say, hey, I knew I was coming on this to only be friends with this guy, but he didn't like me. He didn't want to be friends with me. I got to go where the force takes me. I am one with the force, gentlemen. And the force was with me on Halcyon.
All right. We got to figure this thing out. This is our mission for 2023, is to figure out when and how we can make this possible.
Okay,
and who else is joining.
Okay, well, if we're going to do this
Babu frickin' fantastic adventure.
Okay, if we're going to do this, I have to treat this like a Christmas club that I've got to start squirreling money away, because I'm telling you right now, my wife might be like, oh, you're going to do that again after, you know, after already did.
Except that, you know, I think it's the opposite when Brian was asking the question about, you know, would you bring your spouse? I think I would only bring my spouse if I wanted to get divorced. I think my wife has no interest in doing this.
I'm going to be, again, completely honest.
I think this is going to be one of those where it's like, squirrel it away, and it's like,
this is the nerdiest.
You can go do this thing. Can I have this as my birthday, Christmas, Hanukkah, once in a millennium present?
Look, man, I'm going to be.
And then go from there.
I'm going to be really honest again. It's the nerdiest thing that I've ever done in my life. And I am 44. Well, I don't care. I've embraced that and I don't care. Like, I'm not in this for cool points. It is quite honestly the nerdiest thing that I've ever done. And I'm so proud to say I did it.
I think we go for it. This is like the one nerd moment. Like, you guys know me. Like I've said before, I will super nerd on anything for Star Wars, but where I draw the line is cosplay. It's like the Joker says in the Dark Knight, you have your one rule that won't be broken. Tonight you will break that rule. this is going to be it for me. This is going to be this may be my Dark Knight moment. That if we're going to do this, like we're going to do this, Brian. Like I can see you. Like if we're dressing up like fools, you playing the fool with us.
Oh, I'm a fool. I'm in.
Let's do it. Let's
we
get
should,
it.
You know, we should go all dressed up like the Emperor's weird advisors with the layer cake hats. Can you imagine just going like gaunt makeup, walking around like perfectly like prim and proper?
If they would allow like the synthetic hat, I think I would go like as another species the next time I do it.
This is getting out of hand.
Yeah, it's getting.
Now there are two of them.
All right, gents, this was fun, man. I loved it. Anytime you want to talk Halcyon, I'll talk Halcyon.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing your experience. We will figure out how and where we bring Babu's frickin' podcast to the Halcyon. Those who have listened, thanks so much for joining us again. Like, subscribe, share this out with the world. Join us again in a couple of weeks when we will talk about the next batch of Bad Batch episodes. And we are so close. We are so, so very close to Mandalorian Season 3. You may very well hear our heads explode when that finally comes out. We are so excited. But until then, may the Force be with you.
Always.